Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Happy Discount Chocolate Day. It is Friday, February 15th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gaumont. With me today, once again, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hello, Kelly.
Also with me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, happy Friday.
And happy Friday to you. I want to talk to both of you today. We have a couple of interesting topics. And our first topic is webcams. And not just webcams, but putting a little sticky note over it or one of those little, like there's places that make an actual webcam cover that you can put on that maybe has a logo on it or something. John, talk to us a little bit about what you've discovered about webcams and such.
Well, in the course of my reading, I ran across a Twitter link to John Gruber's Daring Fireball. Mm-hmm. When he talked about, on February 8th, he talked about uncovering webcams. Mm-hmm. And the gist of it is that he had a discussion with Joanna Stern. I think she's with the Wall Street Journal. Is that right?
Yeah, I think
about
so.
How she was victimized by a process that gave external access to her webcam on her MacBook. Mm-hmm. And he went through a discussion of it, just explaining how it happened, the steps that you had to go through to enable it. Turned out it was operator error because it was approval was given for this app to access the camera in mm-hmm. a kind of haphazard kind of way.
Well, I don't think it was haphazard. It was pretty obvious.
It asked for it and she gave it.
Right. It was, this is a, it was LibreOffice and
it said,
hi, you know, basically you're opening, you know, the equivalent of a Word document and it would like to access your camera. That okay? Mm-hmm. And she said mm-hmm. yes.
Yes. Yes. And so there was no circumvention of the system. And then later in the article, John went on to talk about security researchers at Johns Hopkins had discovered that there was a flaw in the way the firmware was loaded for the camera in the past, and you could bypass the protection mechanisms. And later mm-hmm. in 2016, I think, Apple fundamentally changed the way the camera operated, and it's tied to hardware very carefully. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to
mess with
barge
that now.
In on and seize control of the camera, yeah, mm-hmm. without permission. Mm-hmm. So the article was interesting because it laid out a scenario where somebody had something happen to them and it explained why it happened to them. It went into some research from Johns Hopkins about why it was possible in the past and why it's no longer possible, what Apple did. Mm-hmm. And so we don't really need to be putting sticky notes over our camera lenses anymore.
Mm-hmm. Now, so, an interesting thing to me about the whole, like, paranoia about webcams, the thing that surrounds it to me that's sort of interesting is that if your camera is on, whether somebody activated it remotely or whether you are consciously enabling it, whichever way it goes, when you do that, there's a little green indicator light next to the camera that tells you it's on. And the thing I think is interesting is that your computer, this may be breaking news to some people, your computer also has a microphone, and there is absolutely no indication when that microphone is enabled and when that microphone is disabled. And I feel like that would be very handy, because if somebody wanted into your computer, the like audio instead of audio and video would take up way less space, which means they could record for way longer stretches of time. You may not notice, like, if that stuff's being recorded locally to your hard drive or something, you may not notice it happening there. You know, you may not, like, the amount of space that it takes up if it's, like, eating up hard drive space. It's going to happen a lot faster with video than it does with just audio. And it would be a lot easier to kind of hack something together using just an audio clip than it is with video, because with video it's a little more obvious, you know, if edits have been made. So I would like, I know Apple is sort of allergic to indicator lights in any way, and I know that because they keep disappearing from my computer over the years, but it would really be nice if there were some sort of indication that the internal mic was the one being used. And part of the reason that I want that is because, like, right now, I'm not using the internal microphone on my computer. I'm using the one that is hooked up externally to my computer. And I would like to know if I'm inadvertently using the wrong one, and it would be very easy to tell before I connect and, you know, try to start recording a podcast, for example, and everybody goes, wow, I think you're on the wrong microphone.
Well, one of the changes that was made in Safari was a more explicit call out in security and privacy in the system preferences.
Right.
Where in the sidebar, the camera and the microphone are specifically listed. Mm-hmm. And the apps that can access your microphone are specifically called out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we talked about that on the show when that stuff got changed. So I'm hopeful about it. Andrew, how about you? What do you think about covering up your webcam? Do you have a piece of tape on it now?
So I don't have anything physical covering it, but I do have a couple of software tools.
Mm-hmm.
One is called MicroSnitch, and that gives me a little notification if something is using my microphone, whether it's something benign like, you know, the physical mic I'm using right now, or maybe some malware is trying to sneak something.
Yeah.
And the other tool I use is called Oversight. I like it. It's by Patrick Wardle.
Mm-hmm.
He's a security researcher. He used to work for the NSA.
Okay.
And this one does both. It alerts me to things that access the camera and the microphone.
Nice.
Yeah. And I can block it, too, if I want.
Very Is that cool. in the Mac App Store?
No, you have to go to the website.
Okay.
Let's put a link in the show notes.
Yeah,
I'm way ahead of you.
Link.
Okay. I already have a tab open looking it up. That's an interesting idea. Using something like that, I feel like, is pretty useful and should be a little more standard. I would like something in the, not that I need any more icons in my menu bar, but I would like something like the Wi-Fi indicator, you know, that shows like I'm on a network, I'm off a network. I would like something that shows whether or not my mic is live, because I've already got the light for my camera. I would like something else. So it looks like I have some software to install when we're done later. So do you have any like paranoia about this, Andrew, or are you just, I know that you are a person who will practice good software security one way or another. So is this a thing that concerns you? Are you losing sleep over it?
No.
It's okay if the answer is no. Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't say I'm paranoid, but there's still this little thing at the back of my head where I just want to be safe anyway. Just because everything I've learned about the security world.
Yeah. As soon as you get into it, like, yeah, you start you start going, why am I connected to the internet at all? Like, there comes a point when you just start going, maybe it would be easier if I, you know, sort of like when you find out, you know, the car crash statistics in your area, right? You're like, maybe it would be easier if I just never left the house. Yeah. Same sort of thing. Like, maybe I should just disconnect from the internet forever and it would, you know, everything would be fine. This is the kind of thing we talk about when we talk about convenience versus security. Like, yes, if you are going to do any of these sorts of things, you are going to assume a certain amount of risk, whatever that is, and what you do to mitigate it are completely up to you. And that's the bulk of the reason we talk about that stuff so much on this show, is just so that your decisions about all that kind of stuff, what software you use, what utilities you have installed, making sure that those things are that those decisions are as informed as they can be. So I think we're going to go ahead and move on now. If we find out more about any of this, you will definitely find out about it here on the show. But for right now, what I want to do is talk to you about another way to keep your information safe. And to do that, you use a VPN service. And, you know, it's hard not to worry about where your data is actually going. You can be tracked by, you know, the little Facebook tracker that people install on websites. You could be tracked by marketing companies. You know, you look something up and all of a sudden that's the only ads you ever get on Instagram anymore. And even your mobile provider or your ISP are making it easier for people to mine the data that they get from you and your everyday web surfing and then sell that to another company, which is, you know, not great. But it is a thing that does happen. And one of the things you can do is you can help keep that data from being useful by using a VPN. And I'm going to tell you about ExpressVPN, which specifically has very easy to use apps. They run on your mobile devices. They run on your computer, whether you have an iMac or a laptop, and it's one click on, one click off anytime you're anywhere that's not your home network, where you have ultimate control to ratchet down all kinds of security settings. If you're on any other network where you don't have unfettered access to make sure that everything is set up how you would prefer it for your information, you can go ahead and turn this on. It's very easy. It runs in the background. Nothing's any slower. It's really great. The next thing that it does is it takes all of your information and encrypts that data and hides your public IP address. So anything trying to build a profile on you isn't really going to get anywhere. And additionally, it makes it so that people can't get in because they're not able to track down your public IP address. So nobody's going to be able to, nobody with unsavory intentions is going to be able to break into your system and get to your data. ExpressVPN costs less than $7 a month. It comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. It's the number one rated VPN service by TechRadar. And because you listen to this show, discerning listener, I'm going to give you 3 months free if you buy a one-year package. Go to expressvpn.com/TDO to learn more. That's expressvpn.com/TDO. Now, our other topic today is tailor-made for a Friday discussion with our friendly neighborhood robot, John Martellaro.
I am happy to be here.
So, John, we need you to return from subroutine on the webcam stuff and come talk to us about this new AI institute.
Yeah, Elon Musk joined up with a startup backer, Sam Altman, to put artificial intelligence on a more open course. Mm-hmm. They co-founded this research institute called OpenAI, according to Wired, mm-hmm. the article I'm looking at. And hopefully the discoveries that they make will be for the common good. But they developed this text generator that was able to learn the nuances of human speech and language and was able to generate some scary, informative text that sounded very authoritative.
Just like you.
And it's scary. Scare the dickens out of Elon Musk, and they're not going to release it. And the specter came up in the Wired article about how in the hands of other people, or as tools developed by other people, mm-hmm. could generate text, that news text and opinion text that is indistinguishable from humans with valid opinions. Mm-hmm. And could be used, it could be weaponized and could be used to mislead and confuse people.
Apparently, it could also be used to populate in a Wild West themed destination for people with lots of money, right?
I'm sorry.
It was a Westworld joke, John.
Oh, I don't get HBO. So one of these days, okay. I'll see Westworld.
Well, yeah, we can't talk about this and not. I can't not make a Westworld reference. So the thing that's interesting to me about that was interesting to me about this at first blush was the part where they wanted to make things more open and more available as far as AI goes, which is interesting because there's been a little bit more discussion about that lately. And being able to, you know, share research because there's sort of an approach where like you want to keep it to yourself. You know, like a company wants to keep it to itself to make money. And yet people who are researching just want to share the data with everybody so that everybody has everybody's data and make the best mm-hmm. things that they can make. And one of the things that I have thought about with regards to AI in particular is the thing that we've talked about more lately, which is not always understanding the ramifications. So, you know, just because you can doesn't mean you should. You know, which dates all the way back to Jurassic Park, another Michael Crichton classic, that, you know, because it's a thing where you sort of have to think through the ramifications of what's actually happening. And that sounds like what happened here with learning language and being able to communicate in a way that is virtually indistinguishable from an actual human being.
It makes me think that we're going to have to get to the point where we start rating in some fashion, the authoritativeness of news sources, because, you know, for a long time on the internet engendered open speech and more opinions and, and more writing and more discourse. And that was good. But the prospect of AI being used as a weapon to mislead people politically or even technically means that we have to pay much more attention to the source of our information. So, you know, you need to be reading, for example, the New York Times and not some teenager's blog from the basement that looks good. So, we have to get accustomed to that. One of the people I had on Background Mode recently, Susan Bearden, is an expert in ed tech, and she's written a book about how to be a good internet citizen. It sounds like hygiene, but actually it's just being really astute about how to handle yourself on the internet. Topics such as, you know, how to handle bullying and and how to be safe and how to be wise about where you go on the internet and things like that. So there really needs to be some sort of training, I think.
Right. And we've talked about that.
As people grow older. As far as I know, there's no, except for this book and maybe some classes that are based on the book, it's not a widespread phenomena that I know of to teach people how to conduct themselves on the internet.
Clearly the answer to that is no.
I remember when I was in seventh grade, my seventh grade math teacher would end every class by holding up a newspaper in front of us and showing us an ad and saying, "What's wrong with this?" And we would dissect it, you know, and it would say, "Nobody beats our product." And he would explain to us when they say nobody beats our product, that means they're all equal. So he taught us about critical thinking in seventh grade mathematics class, but that's a rarity.
And I had an English teacher who would do the same thing, but it was for sort of marketing and ad-related kinds of things. So saying nobody beats our product is a glittering generality, is what that's called. I remember that stuff because I remember, like, it was almost a peek behind the scenes to see how that stuff worked, right? And yeah, nobody beats our product means they're all the, you know, means they're all the same and things like that. And being able to sort of consider that and, you know, being a good internet citizen, you know, nobody really talking about that is the same kind of thing that I think of when we talk about, you know, again, security and stuff here, is that having the internet as part of daily life hasn't been going on long enough for people to have the kind of security and good neighbor practices that we have around owning a house or driving a car or using an ATM. Like, there's a basic level of stuff that goes with those things that people talk about and that you sort of get that sort of get passed on because they've been part of culture for so long. You know, we've been driving cars for over 100 years.
Yeah. We're sort of like the old Wild Wild West to the internet days.
When
Saturday night, the drunkards would come into town and shoot up the saloon.
Yes. That's exactly where we are.
And yeah, that's where we are. And eventually that didn't happen anymore, but
right. It took a while to get there, but eventually it happened. And I think we're still kind of in that state right now. And, that's, and, you know, and part of that is that information isn't ingrained in people who have it now, who pass it on to people who don't have it.
This is why I'm enthusiastic about the Apple subscription news service that we've been hearing about, because, you know, even though Washington Post and New York Times have their own subscriber base, I was told New York Times has 3 million web subscribers, and they're doing quite well, very healthy. And they're reluctant to give up 50% to Apple. I think that's when somebody tries to collect authoritative news sources in one place and make it easy. It's sort of like what Apple did for music, you know, in the early days when there was so much pirating going on, when it was easy to buy music, you don't pirate. And when it's easy to subscribe to an Apple news service that collects together the best news sources, then it's too much trouble to go read the junk. So I applaud Apple for doing that.
Best in accuracy and sourcing and like correctness almost in a way. Like, that's the thing. Not necessarily the stuff that you agree with most, because, you know, not all news goes in everybody's favor, you know, in real life.
If I were Elon Musk, I'd be scared too about this, the prospects of this being used by foreign countries to disrupt American democracy and to just mislead young people who are not tuned into this.
I don't think you have to be Elon Musk to be worried about that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Andrew, what do you think of this AI kind of thing?
Well, going on what John said before, with that Apple News subscription coming up, I wouldn't mind seeing a rating system in Apple News, similar to the one we have in podcasts, where you can rate a podcast and maybe leave a review. Mm-hmm. Although I guess that would open up the possibility of, if there's a website or author or person doesn't like, they could like mass one-star spam them. That.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
With their own anti-AI. Yeah.
The Wired article talks about that. Andrew talks about fake reviews at business sites. It's like, you know, a deluge of bad reviews at Yelp denigrating a restaurant that are they're all fake and putting it out of business from a competitor. Right.
I would rather it be somebody with no dog in the fight. You know, somebody that like all they do, you know, like Snopes, basically. Like, let you know, Snopes doesn't have any sort of political leaning. They just care if it's fake or not. And being able to have that sort of rating system on sources of news, not just individual articles, but like on the source of news, like this place tends to get it right. This place is okay at getting it right. You know, kind of the same way that we're rating Apple rumors already, I guess, you know, like you sort of like, we know by following all these places, like what that track record looks like. So yeah, this person is telling us, yeah, no, this person is telling us we should really consider the implications of that because there's a good chance that some piece of that is true, you know, and getting that information, I think, would be super helpful because like, you know, I don't, whether or not I agree with the news, I just want to make sure what I'm hearing is true. And that to me is the most important piece. And that's part of
or
what
at least authentic.
Authentic. Yeah. Legitimate. You know, well sourced, well reported, like whatever it is, I want it to be right. Like if you know, that's sort of what
I don't mind reading another Mac community author who's wrong. I just want to make sure it's really him or her.
That's true. Yes, wrong and entertaining is also sometimes a worthwhile read. Yeah, you know, there is that. I'll give you that. Yeah. So I think there will be more to report on this in the very near future.
Always.
Because this is a thing that is absolutely going to grow and change and evolve over time. So as it does, you will hear about it here. And I want to thank both of you for being here today. Thanks for coming by, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And John, thanks for being here.
It's nice to be here.
I always love an update from our friendly neighborhood robot. And I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. This is the Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast for Friday, February 15th, 2019. I will talk to all of you on Monday. Have an excellent weekend. And in the meantime, be excellent to each other.